Good morning.
Roto experts.
To the end zone.
The mark of fantasy excellence.
You have to be careful about who you think is stepping forward on the depth chart.
It's time for a touchdown.
You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Hello and welcome to the Roto Experts. Here for January 24th, 2019. I am Scott Engel, the managing director of RotoExperts.com. I am the king. I am fantasy here with you every day now, on demand, talking fantasy football and a whole lot more. Not a lot going on in fantasy baseball yet, but we're going to get to that as well. Less than 3 weeks now before pitchers and catchers report, so a lot more coming up. Make sure that you stay with RotoExperts.com as we are now 365 throughout the year covering fantasy football. All the latest is up there, including the latest draft wide receiver rankings from Davis Maddock and the new Keeper League column from myself, the Keeper Corner. We'll talk about that in a little while as well, but lots to cover. We got 2 weeks of Super Bowl hype, but as far as fantasy football and everything, we have to focus on the offseason, our keeper, our dynasty leagues, and a lot of seasonal players. They're already looking ahead to the 2019 season. So lots to cover. And today, we'll start with an interesting report. According to NFL Draft insider Tony Pauline, some front office types, general managers, scouts are, quote, starting to detest analytics, end quote, as a means of player evaluation, decision-making, interpretation, etc. And here's something that we've heard in other sports before. Police report says scouts and coaches that he's spoken to since last week's East-West Shrine All-Star Game remain believe that analytics have little to do with strategy, X's and O's, as well as the work ethic and personality of players, or the ability of prospects to fit as a certain position. As this was worded in a published report. And, this is not a surprise to me. Those who have followed me for a long time know I credentialed in Major League Baseball. And, you know, I've seen this reflected in Major League Baseball certainly as well. There still is a clash in baseball and football about those who believe in the eyeball test and those who crunch the numbers. Now, my personal evaluation on it is that both are worthy, but with analytics, sabermetrics, it's really taken over in baseball in evaluation. You know, we've seen a lot of sabermetric people in Major League Baseball front offices, and we saw it in football with the Cleveland Browns recently, a few years ago, when they went to get their GM, and he was an analytics-based guy. And you know, these cultures are going to clash. Sometimes it's not old. Originally, it was viewed as like old school versus new school. And it's not necessarily old school versus new school necessarily, because there's a lot of people who are even younger and the players themselves who just don't believe in the analytics. And I talk to a lot of baseball players, and when I throw some of the stats up, there's a very small handful that have any regard for it at all. You know, I'll talk to a baseball player and say, oh, did you realize that, that some of the analytics said you were chasing more pitches outside of the zone, etc. And, you know, a lot of guys would be like, you know what? You get everywhere from players who say, I don't pay any attention to that. I just go out and play my game. Of course, it's not as simple as that. They focus a lot of the fundamentals on watching video, etc. Some players will say, yeah, I kind of look at some of that kind of stuff, but I don't let it really play too heavily into what my approach is. Talked to Jay Bruce last year about it, and he said it's not something he pours over about it, but when Jay Bruce was with the Mets, he said that, you know, he had some input with one of the front office guys that used analytics, and the guy told him some numbers, and he said, oh, I didn't realize that about the way I was swinging, and he took a different approach, and it helped him. So some of the players may go as far as to seek out what the analytics guys are telling them, but I really haven't found any players who say, I sit there and crunch the numbers. And I'm saying that because a lot of former players go on to be coaches, and this is true in baseball as well as football. And guys that play the game focus on it one way, and guys that have not played the game focus it on it another way. Now, you look at this through the lens of fantasy sports, and a lot of people who, bring analytics into the equation, we're doing that a lot more in Roto Experts, and I think it's very helpful. You got guys like who I really respect, like the football scientist, Casey Joyner of ESPN.com. He does a great job, but look, it is what it is. I'm not insulting anybody. A lot of these analytical types are not the type of guys that play pro football. And the ones that played pro football, they look at it in a different way. So there's going to be a natural clash between those who play the game and those who didn't and look at it through a different lens, sort of a different prism, etc. But yet both viewpoints are valid. I hate when players say, oh, these media types don't know because they never played the game. Well, a lot of us who are in the media maybe never had, we're just blessed with those physical gifts to play the game, but we do have a gift for scouting the game or looking at the game in a certain way. And I think smart, mature players and front office people, there are a lot of them that do respect and say, you know, it's not the way that I go about things, but there's a lot of validity to it. And I think in a lot of sports, even basketball, there's a lot of analytics and numbers crunching. And it works. You know, you look at a site like Daily Roto, we don't have any former NFL players or NBA players on the staff, but what these guys do is very, very valid. And I think people who are open-minded are going to accept it. But when you get a certain group of guys, like former players, and they're used to doing things a certain way, sometimes going to be hard for them to accept outside perspectives. In my view of how I cover football and I came to do this, I really tried to combine both. I watch the eyeball test. I try to look at things like a scout. And so, you know, when I'm looking at a running back, I say, you know, this guy's got good vision. He's got good balance. He can make people miss. And then I go to some of the analytics. And when I'm analyzing baseball, there's really a ton of analytics to play into. Like, for instance, you know, looking at Drew Pomeranz signing with the San Francisco Giants 2 years ago. He was 17-6 with a 3.32 ERA, but he also had an 80% strand rate. You know, a lot of times, like things like strand rate and BABIP will tell you a lot about a player's performance. Sometimes, though, there are other things in baseball that will spur a player's performance. In the past, I've talked about players going from one city to the next and getting a refreshing outlook on things. Like whenever Hanley Ramirez went from one city to another, he would play really well when he arrived because he was what one beat reporter described to me as a honeymoon type of guy. When he got to a new city, he wanted to make an immediate impact. There are lots of intangible things that play in as well. Sometimes an older player taking a younger player under his wing. Sometimes the fundamentals that a guy works into the offseason. So I really think, you know, if you're going to be a good fantasy player, if you're going to be a good bettor or evaluator, or just to look at sports even through a general prism and evaluate players, which is what a lot of what we do here in fantasy, and also a lot of what you do in handicapping. I think you have to take it all into account. You know, where should you personally, where do I personally stand on this topic? It's a thing of where you have to be open-minded and not dismiss either side. Some of the best interviews I do when you hear Roto Experts at the Park are when I talk to coaches, because coaches will tell you a lot about the fundamentals of a guy's swing or a guy's mechanics, etc. But then you can crunch the numbers for other things. So both of it is valid. Could you say that some of these former player types, scout, front office types, feel threatened by this wave of analytics, which is already well ingratiated to every major sport? Of course, because you know, it's not something that they do openly, although you know, I'm sure there's coaches out there that pay attention to the analytics because they want to be open-minded. And, you know, there are some managers and coaches who do put stock in it. But, you know, I think it's natural. I think it's human to be threatened by this kind of thing. But I think anybody who's really not threatened by it and secure is going to embrace analytics as maybe something to supplement or to partner with what they do in their evaluation. And a lot of these analytic guys, you know, they can't evaluate players maybe like these coaches, professional coaches, and former players can, because they haven't played the game. They're not privy to an NFL playbook or a lot of the things you see inside a major league clubhouse. They're not privy to the intangibles. A lot of times when I talk about certain things, people who are very analytic will dismiss intangibles. It's you know, we were talking about on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network yesterday. We were talking about on the Fantasy Football Frenzy, where it happened to come up about whether closure has to have a certain mentality or not. And a lot of times the analytics numbers crunching guys will dismiss that, whereas when I talk to current and former players, say, yes, there is an intangible part to being a closer in Major League Baseball. You have to have a short memory. It's also like, it's almost like being like an NFL type of quarterback or something like that, where you have to have a very short memory. You know, talking to some major league pitchers, there's just, when you go out on the mound in the ninth inning, it's very different. You know, you're trying to shut down the game, whether you're at home or especially on the road. There's a lot more adrenaline flowing, you know, throughout the crowd, etc. You know, that makes a difference. The pitcher's adrenaline is flowing more because he's in that type of position. And also the batter is, you know, is also a lot of, under a lot of intense pressure. So that there's something mentally to shutting the door in Major League Baseball. So you gotta be able to embrace both. Yeah, you have to be able to talk about the analytics, and you also have to talk about the intangibles. I don't fall on either side of the debate, as you can hear. It's like I fall somewhere in the middle. I'm going to keep my ears open as an evaluator, especially when it comes for fantasy purposes, as to what the numbers say, as what also what coaches, players, managers say. It's, you know, being around the game of Major League Baseball the last decade, you just see certain things and you hear certain things being around a press box, a Major League clubhouse, that you don't when you're watching the games on television, reading about them online. You know, sometimes the best reporters will communicate that kind of stuff, but a lot of times things are just, you know, they're mental. They're inside a player's head as well. You know, we've seen players have bad seasons just because something's going on personally, etc. So, you know, you have your numbers, but you also have your intangibles. You have your fundamentals. When I talk about baseball, it's a very, very tough game, and everything you can do to evaluate it, you know, you got to do. And when it comes to football, though, you know, football is a much different strategic game. It's about matchups and X's and O's. You know, baseball is about batter pitcher matchups. Football is much more about the X's and O's. And you know, I think there's a lot of validity what Pro Football Focus puts out there, and I think a lot of smart evaluators will embrace that stuff rather than dismiss it. Moving on to some recent NFL news. that we have for you here. Just not a lot going on yet when it comes to NFL news. But Larry Fitzgerald was re-signed by the Arizona Cardinals to a one-year contract. He wants to finish his career with the team that he started it with the team that drafted him. And I think that's, you know, that's very, very admirable. And the Cardinals really didn't know if he was going to come back. You know, he said he had to take some time to get away from the game, basically clear his head, etc. And now he has decided to come back. He's going to come back on a one-year deal. They have a new coach in Cliff Kingsbury, who said he would absolutely love to coach Larry Fitzgerald as he tries to put an imprint on this offense. I have a lot of respect for Larry Fitzgerald. Playing for one team and for his entire career is something you don't always see in sports today. And Larry Fitzgerald got to play in the Super Bowl once with the Arizona Cardinals. The one thing he has left to do, because he's a definite Hall of Famer, is to win the Super Bowl. And if he's going to play one more year with the Arizona Cardinals, I think it's very tough for him to do that. There were rumors and hope that he was going to play for Minnesota as their third receiver. And that made a lot of sense because, you know, to pair him as a third guy along with Thielen and Stephon Diggs, have him pair with Kirk Cousins, you know, new coaching in place, etc. You know, Minnesota could really get back to a spot where they're a Super Bowl contender. And he would have, you know, Larry Fitzgerald is from Minnesota. His father is a longtime sports writer in the Minnesota area. So it would have made a lot of sentimental sense. It was kind of like a Marshawn Lynch kind of thing where you're wondering if he was going to play for his hometown team this upcoming season. But it turns out that he'll be going back to Arizona. And, you know, this really helps Cliff Kingsbury. It really helps Josh Rosen. And it helps some of the younger receivers like Christian Kirk out there. You know, at 36 years old, playing since 2004, Larry Fitzgerald is very much like a player coach at this point. So he's a great guy to have in the clubhouse. He's a great guy to have on the sideline. And he can still help out a little bit on the field, but he's no longer going to be a fantasy starter. 69 catches for 734 yards and 6 touchdowns this past season. Only once did he go over 90 yards, and only once did he go over 100 yards. So, you know, you're going to say Larry Fitzgerald is done? Well, you know, maybe that's a product of the offense because the year before, he became the oldest player to have 100 receptions. So maybe the Cardinals feel that Larry Fitzgerald is not done and that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and his staff could come in and maybe get a jolt to the offense. But I really feel like the Arizona Cardinals could use one more difference-making wide receiver. And, you know, it's been said that that Cliff Kingsbury likes those run-after-the-catch types. Golden Tate is out there as a free agent. To bring Golden Tate to Arizona, I think, would be a very, very nice play. You have Larry Fitzgerald, Golden Tate, Christian Kirk, Chad Williams as the top four wide receivers that could, and then you have David Johnson coming out of the backfield. That really is builds a nice supporting cast. So, look, Kingsbury and Cobb Company and the front office might have decided that with Larry Fitzgerald, that's all they really need to bring in. But, you know, maybe they will address the position in free agency. So that will be something to watch. You want to see if they're going to address that position in free agency. I think one more piece, what you really want to do, and I'm sure Cliff Kingsbury is thinking this because he's a professional coach, is that, you know, I need to make my young quarterback to be successful. I have to surround him with the best talent that I possibly can. So that means improving the offensive line. And you already got David Johnson, you got Larry Fitzgerald, you got Christian Kirk, who's a nice piece, but I think one more difference maker in that offense, a guy in the type of vision that the kind of player that Cliff Kingsbury likes. When you talk about somebody like Golden Tate, I see that being a really nice fit. Larry Fitzgerald, I think you'd probably draft him as a wide receiver 4 in fantasy football. next year, hoping for a little bit of upside in that offense. Not a guy that you want to play regularly. Hopefully his numbers can boost a little bit. But I'll watch to see what this team is going to do in the offseason. You're listening to the Roto Experts podcast. We're here daily on demand on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Love for you guys to be interactive with the show. Follow me on at Scott E. Roto X on Twitter. And I'll gladly answer all your questions on the show. Just say, Scott, you know, I had a question for you to answer live on the podcast. Here it is. Or here's my comment, etc. Follow me at Scott E. Roto X on Twitter. Be glad to answer all your questions. The countdown continues with RotoExperts.com and the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Yesterday, we posted the latest in our countdown of the top 100 fantasy players of the 2018 season. And you can see them right now at RotoExperts.com. And they will be revealed every day on the Fantasy Football Frenzy from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And of course, you know, YouTube and wherever you can stream it. They'll reveal the players every day. Corey Parson, Jim Day, and Chris Venture will comment. Then you can go to rotoexperts.com and see the latest listing of the players with breakdowns, capsules, analysis, etc. Basically, what we did, if you're hearing about this for the first time, is we came up with a mathematical formula by our lead full-time statistician and chief technical officer, Arturo Galletti. He came up with a formula, which then helped him tweak. And then the staff went over, the top 100 for some subjective tweaks. Basically, the players were evaluated on where they were ranked every week and how they performed overall against expectations for every given week and how they performed against the average player at their position. So looking at some of those, talking about Golden Tate, actually, he was actually yesterday, and you can see it now at rotoexperts.com, players 80 through 71 were posted at Golden Tate. Landed at number 78 on the countdown, and we were just talking about Golden Tate. And when discussing Golden Tate, he's a unrestricted free agent. Don't know if he's going to be back in Philly, but I think there's a lot of teams out there that can use him. Yesterday we talked about possible landing spots for Jared Cook, but hey, you know, what about Golden Tate? And I came up with a list of several teams here, and you can tell me what you think. And if I missed anybody on Twitter, at Scotty Roto X. But I think, I base this, I put it in order of what teams available salary cap would be there too. And there's a lot of young quarterback. I think Golden Tate would go really well on a team with a young quarterback because – you know, Tate is a guy who could be a terrific possession receiver and gain yardage after the catch. He's a terrific, safe sort of guy for any NFL team looking for a possession receiver and a guy who could make things happen after the catch. Now, I did hear some rumors over the years, and when he was with the Seahawks, he got into some things in the locker room. Didn't always get along with his coaches, I've heard over the years, when he left Seattle. So there's an intangible part there, too, with Golden Tate. He has to be the right fit in the locker room for wherever he goes. But Buffalo, a lot of salary cap room. They could use a proven veteran wide receiver, especially one for Josh Allen. Josh Allen's not afraid to throw deep, but he certainly is a guy that could use a more reliable and dependable possession wide receivers. Buffalo has a lot of cap room, and Golden Tate can make some money going there. I already mentioned Arizona for the reasons which I already laid out. And then there's Green Bay. The Packers, maybe they'll move on from Randall Cobb. They have that big-time touchdown guy, Davante Adams. You know, they got some of these younger receivers. Golden Tate, I think, would be a nice fit in Green Bay as well. You know, Aaron Rodgers would love to have a guy like that. You know, he could make things happen after the catch, because that's what Randall Cobb used to do. So, you know, the Packers, I think, need some more wide receivers. They do have some room there. If Golden Tate says, hey, I don't want to play with a young guy, hey, go play with Aaron Rodgers. Here's an interesting angle, maybe going back to Seattle, where they know him, where Pete Carroll knows him, and Pete Carroll feels he can handle any kind of personality. Would Golden Tate return to the team that drafted him? You know, he left on his own volition there, but things have changed dynamically there, you know, personnel-wise. Would he want to go back to the Seahawks? Is that something the Seahawks consider? They could use another wide receiver, but I think it's kind of a long shot. It would be a really nice fit because I think the Seahawks do need another playmaker in the passing game, but Doug Baldwin's returns healthy. I think maybe they could use a bigger target. Somebody could help them in the red zone. I think that's more the direction they want to look. You saw them toy with Brandon Marshall last year as well. So I think they're still looking for that kind of guy who could be a big target. Like I said yesterday, Jared Cook would be the perfect fit. The spot I like the most for Golden Tate is the Baltimore Ravens, that I've been on record as already, I was already saying this, is I think Tate would be a perfect fit to go with a young guy like Lamar Jackson, who really didn't have any dependable wide receivers last year. I already gave all the reasons why I like Golden Tate with a young quarterback. And, you know, Golden Tate, you know, became used to running the scramble drill with Russell Wilson early in his career. You know, he's played with a mobile quarterback. And when you have a mobile quarterback who's going to break the pocket and needs guys to run the scramble drill, you want somebody experienced doing that. And also a possession guy who can make things happen after the catch. I think Golden Tate would be a terrific addition in Baltimore. I think get a ton of targets. His PPR outlook would rise again. Golden Tate would be absolutely perfect in Baltimore, I think. You know, Lamar Jackson is going to do a lot of work outside of the pocket, and I think Golden Tate's been there, done that, and would be an ideal fit to help out a young Lamar Jackson. Then you could also look at Chicago, but they already have a lot of guys in place, not a lot of room under the cap. Then the only other spot that I really think, you know, could the New Orleans Saints really use a guy like this as well? You have your big target in Michael Thomas. Golden Tate would love to play for a team that's got a chance to win the Super Bowl. They'd have to clear some cap room to do it. You could have Thomas as your big receiver. Tate is your possession guy. He could make things happen after the catch. And then you have Tre'Quan Smith as a downfield guy. That really improves you know, the pass-catching core just from an overall talent circumference perspective for Drew Brees. And, you know, Drew Brees, not quite the downfield gunner that he used to be. You know, to have a guy could really help him with his high percentage, short range passing game. I think the New Orleans Saints, if they were to get Golden Tate, that would be a heck of an addition. But I think maybe the three most realistic landing spots for him are Buffalo, Arizona, and Baltimore. You can make cases for Green Bay and New Orleans as well. The Miami Dolphins do have to clear a lot of cap room, but they certainly need some receiving help. You know, if they want to take him on down there with the new coaching regime, which they still have to set up. The Dolphins are taking it some time. I don't think we can forget the Miami Dolphins either. You know, when we talk about something like this, 74 on the list was O.J. Howard, and O.J. Howard. When you look at the tight ends for next year, you look at the big three, you really know who they are at this point. It's Kelsey, it's Ertz, and it's Kittle. Now, after that, you could say Eric Ebron, you want to throw him in there, sort of Jared Cook. But if there's a guy that can get close to the big three or maybe even a big four next year. I think it could be O.J. Howard. I really do. You know, the talent was there. Everybody talked about it coming out of college. But you really saw it on display last year. And although he only played through week 11 because of a season-ending ankle injury, he certainly showed us a lot. Double-figure PPR performances in 7 of 10 games and 5 TDs in his first 8 games. Hopefully, you know, this new coaching regime is going to bring more offensive balance there. They'll get a better running back. But O.J. Howard, I think, could have a really big year as their best, one of their best TD targets. Now, of course, Mike Evans is a guy that's going to catch a lot of TDs and everything's humming. But if this team's going to continue to throw the ball a lot as effectively, O.J. Howard is going to be a big part of that. Regular red zone threat, a big target that can catch on third downs. With all the other weapons there in Tampa Bay, it might be presumptuous to say that O.J. Howard can join the big three, because when you look at Kittle, who else does he have around him? Ertz is clearly the very top target in that passing game. And in Kansas City, it's really just Kelce and Hill, and yeah, Watkins to a lesser degree. Where is O.J. Howard going to fall into pecking order? You know, that remains to be seen. Mike Evans, of course, is the top guy, but who's going to be number two in that offense? Is it going to be Chris Godwin? Is it going to be O.J. Howard? But I think O.J. Howard's going to be prominent enough where I can confidently rank him as the number four tight end going into next year. You say, Scott, look, well, what about Eric Ebron? Look at Eric Ebron this past year and all the touchdowns that he scored. You know, 13, you know, is the most in the NFL for a tight end. But, you know, he's going to have Jack Doyle back there next year. And that's going to cut into his numbers. Jared Cook, very good, but we have to see where he lands, and he has a long, long history of inconsistency. So O.J. Howard's going to be my number four tight end going into next year. You know, especially as I churn out my ranks very soon here on rotoexperts.com, we're going to have very early ranks coming from myself and Davis Maddock, etc. And then, you know, another guy I find very interesting is number 71 on top 100, Chris Herndon. Now, look, a lot of people say preseason is useless. For me, it's not. I actually got to go to a Jets preseason game, and I was watching Sam Darnold, and I said, the guy likes to throw to a lot his tight ends very often. He has other targets out there, but he seems to really trust his tight ends, and he's really in the preseason. I saw him in a live game really, you know, look for guys like Chris Herndon. And when Herndon got the opportunity starting around week 6, I said, you know what? I remember in the preseason, these guys showed a connection with each other. I would not be surprised if Chris Herndon became very useful. So, and then from week 6 through 16, in 7 of 10 games, he had 8-plus fantasy points in 7 of those 10 games. Now you say, okay, 8's not a lot, but when you look at the state of tight end, and I think about 4 of those were double-figure performances, about half of them were double-figure performances, that was kind of impressive. I mean, 8 points from a tight end in this day and age when you don't have an elite guy, I think that was sort of respectable for a rookie there. You know, you saw some other tight ends ranked higher on a weekly basis who didn't even hit 8 points. There were weeks where Austin Hooper, Kyle Rudolph, et cetera, didn't even hit 8 points. You know, Herndon completely exceeded expectations. In week 6 through 8, he scored a touchdown in every week, and then he had a great performance in week 16 against the Packers in a fantasy Super Bowl. Now, look, Herndon was inconsistent. Some people think I overrate him, but he was my guy. But I thought he showed a lot of potential, and I actually had him on 2 Super Bowl winning rosters. Because tight end came to the point where if I did have one of the big three, I didn't want to get killed at the position every week. And I wanted a guy who had upsides once in a while, and Chris Herndon really fit that description. He didn't kill me really in most weeks, especially when he was giving me like 8 points or so. And there were a few weeks where he got me into double figures and he helped me to victory. So look, you can't have the ideal player in every position in fantasy football when you're talking about how many guys you start every given week. But Herndon did a nice job And I think he's only looking up as it goes into year two. I think Sam Darnold already has rapport with him. And as Sam Darnold continues to improve, Herndon's a guy that you have to have on your radar next year, I think, if you don't get one of the top tight ends. If you play in a dynasty league and you have Chris Herndon, like I do, in one of my dynasty formats, you know, there's a guy with some promise, I believe. And a lot of times over the years, we saw young tight ends come in their first year and do nothing. For the fact for Chris Herndon to come in the ground running in his very first year, when a lot of tight ends don't develop until year two or year three, I think that's very, very impressive to me. So when it comes to fantasy, I am a Chris Herndon fan. And for more keeper analysis, check out my brand new keeper quarter on rotoexperts.com. It's now posted, where I answer your keeper questions on social media and also spotlight certain players that might lead to challenging keeper decisions. Check that out on rotoexperts.com right now. One baseball note as we get close to wrapping up here. Drew Pomeranz signed with the San Francisco Giants. It's a nice flyer for the team that's trying to get another veteran arm in there. Just 2 years ago, Pomeranz was 17-6 with a 3.32 ERA, a year after being an all-star for the Padres. But when you looked at his xFIP, it was 4.15, and then he had an 80% strand rate. You knew some regression was coming last year, but not to the point where it really hit. Pomeranz had an awful season last year. He had a 3.44 BABIP, which was completely unlucky, obviously. And now the Giants are taking a flyer on a guy that they just need to stay healthy, and I think he's got a good shot to bounce back. Ideally, they would like to use him as a veteran starter. If not, he could be a reliever for them. But, you know, this is a guy that when you're trying to build your depth in fantasy baseball in the later rounds, you know, maybe you'll have to take a shot on him as a rebound player, especially going back to the National League. He knows the National League West very well, and he's playing in a great pitcher's ballpark. Of course, going back to the West, he's going to have to pitch in Colorado a few times, so that's a bad balance out in a certain positive to negative way. But we'll be talking a lot more baseball here on the Roto Experts podcast. So thanks for listening to today's show for January 24th, 2019. Again, follow me at Scotty Roto X. Ask any questions you like on Twitter. And we'll see you Friday on the Roto Experts podcast.